Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to tournament poker strategy. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Fezbuddy and Killing Bird.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. My name is Killing Bird. As always, I'm joined by my astounding and fabulous co-host, Ron Fezbuddy. What's up, sir?
Super. Thanks for asking.
Astounding and fabulous were the best words I could find to describe you.
Very what can I say? Strange choice of words to start the podcast. You're fabulous too, Eric.
I was waiting for my compliment. I'm like, damn, he's not going to even say how great I am.
You just missed me.
I did. Yeah. It's been too long.
It's been way too long.
I don't know what to do without you in my life. Okay, it's getting weird now. So welcome back, everybody, to the podcast. Good to be here. How have things been for you, man?
Things have been good. Busy. Playing a little poker lately. I've been back at the grind, doing pretty well too. Shipped some mergage stuff recently last week, a 20K $33 buy-in, and that was a nice win. So back in the swing of things. How about you?
Cool. Yeah, I mean, just still grinding. Probably actually have decreased my volume amazingly.
Really?
I've kind of gone from like maybe playing 4 or 5 days a week to playing 3 to 4 days a week, which has actually been really nice. Feeling much more rested than I used to when I used to play 20 days a week. So, so it's been good. No crazy scores or anything. Like the first 2 months of this year have been a lot of breaking even, which I guess isn't the worst thing.
Right.
It's like I said to somebody today, it's like breaking even is as much a part of variance as downswings and upswings.
Sure.
You know, it's like sometimes you downswing for 2 months, sometimes you break even for 2 months.
Yeah.
Just kind of been going through that, and I can't really complain either because there's been a lot of big buy-ins lately with the series running on Bovada, and there was the big Sunday on winning where they had the $1 million guarantee that which was a $500 buy-in. So
you ran deep in that, right?
I ran deep in the second chance.
Oh, the second chance, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I, you know, went sort of semi-deep in the, but not even close to the money, I think, in the main event.
Right.
But, or the million. But in the second chance, yeah, I ended up going pretty deep into the money, and I think busting like, I forget now, but maybe like 25th or something like that.
Not a bad 30th. Run. Not a bad run.
Yeah, so it was fun. But yeah, so that's kind of been my story. Other than that, just trying to get through the harsh winter.
Oh, man, don't even start. I live in New York. I live in the East Coast, Northeast. It has been absolutely brutal. I think it's everyone knows that by now, so there's no need to rehash it. But, I mean, for North Carolina, it's probably been unseasonably cold and chilly, huh?
Yeah, we're just not used to getting that kind of snow down here. It's not so much that that we got more than most of the world. It's just we don't have trucks and stuff to remove it, or at least not the volume of trucks required.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, pain in the ass, but yeah, everybody went through that, so no biggie. But and it doesn't matter because in a few months we're going to be in much warmer climates.
Yes, I was going to say the snow does when the snow falls, it does mean that the World Series of Poker schedule is nearing release.
Yes,
and that has indeed happened. We haven't had a chance to talk about it because we haven't been on the air for a couple of weeks, but. It's out, and have you had a chance to look at it and make your schedule yet?
I have indeed. It took me a little longer than usual to kind of get my plan together because this is just a really weird year for me. I mean, normally I go out for, you know, 6 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But this year is a combination of a bunch of events all going on at once, including my 20-year wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's going to be great.
And if she keeps you. But,
no, yeah, but, yeah. If I make it that far. I'm definitely keeping her because she said you should go play the Colossus because the Colossus actually starts exactly on my wedding anniversary.
I've met you. I met your wife. You should never leave.
Yeah. There's no improving for me. I've already got the best deal I can.
Absolutely.
So she was like, you should go play. You know, I know it's on our wedding anniversary, but The more I thought about it, I'm like, nah, that's just not the right thing to do. So yeah. I'm going to hang back. And then my son graduates like, like 8 or 9 days later from high school. And, of course, that is not even a question that I can't miss that. So, so it's going to be kind of weird. I'm going to miss, like, the first couple of weeks, basically.
Yeah. You can't miss – obviously can't miss those events. Do you find yourself fatigued by the middle to the end of the turn of the series usually?
I usually do, although – and I've talked to Mark Galeotto about this. Last year was perfect because I went home in the middle for, like, 8 days.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you didn't know by then.
Yeah, it was the best because I like right around the time I started to get tired, I went home.
Yeah,
spent 8 days with the family, and by the end of that, I was completely refreshed, ready to get back to the grind. So I just flew back out, and I felt good the entire time.
Well, for someone who goes out one trip a year, like myself, for a couple of days to a week, it is without a doubt better to go out near the end. That's what I'm doing this year. So we'll get to my schedule in a second, but when you're at home and you're watching it, because I like to watch the live stream at night, it's actually nice sort of, going to bed sort of, well, it's 8 hours long, so it's not really watching it a little bit before bed, but I would, have the stream running, do work, whatever. You have that part of the fun of the series is the eternal hope that you have going into the series and the sort of positive, optimistic feeling about can't wait to get there and thinking about, seeing your buddies and thinking about making a deep run. And it's just nicer. Like, I got to tell you, it's just nicer to hang on to that feeling for a little bit longer before you go out there and you get your soul crushed.
So true.
No, but it's so if you had to make a choice before the beginning or – because you're gonna run straight through to the end then, right?
I'm basically gonna come out like around the 18th, uh-huh. and then stay right through the main event. So, and I think that's way better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna come out near the end. I'm not playing the main event this year. It is I think I've said this on the show before. My wife's birthday is usually right in the middle of the main event, it's kind of a sore spot to always go out during the main event. I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done it more times than not in the past 7 years. So, I tried just maybe do it every other year, let a year go by, and then once the satellites were announced on ACR, WPN,
yep.
WPN, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm on ACR. The WPN network announced satellites in the main event, which is awesome. And I started thinking about, well, maybe I'll just play some satellites. And I mentioned that to her. And she's like, really? You're going to miss my birthday again this year? And I said, you know what? It's just not worth it this year. So this year, I'm pretty actually excited about the schedule I put together. Why don't we go through what's coming up on the WSOP and talk about our schedule? So we're missing, we're both missing the Colossus, which if you don't, I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you know about it. But it's the first $565 with the rake, $500 buy-in at the World Series of Poker with a $5 million guarantee, which means they're expecting 10,000 people. It's a 2-day, it's 4 starting flights over 2 days, and it's going to be gigantic. I think, just looking at the boards, 2+2 and whatnot, people are already talking about it's going to be my first event. I never can make it out before. Even at a 1K buy-in was, people found that too steep, but the $500 price point really changes things, I think. So that's a pretty colossus event.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. And it's, as much as I'm bummed I'm going to miss the event, I'm pretty excited not to have to navigate the hallways of the Rio during that, because it is going
to
be chaos.
Really going to have to hold it in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, find the secret bathroom in the back hallway, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But it is – that's an exciting event, and it gets – what I just love about that is that it gets more people into the live the World Series of Poker. And World Series of Poker is fucking awesome. People – I love it. People who, love the game, everyone should have an opportunity to play it. It's just there's nothing like being in that big room with that many people. That's one of the things I love about live poker. Even, if I could play Foxwoods $500 tournament and there's, 200 people there. So being in a room with that many people playing poker when, I know it's a grind. I know for a lot of people it's, it's day in, day out. But for people who this tournament is targeted to, it gives more more of those type of people an opportunity to experience the massiveness of the huge MTT. So I think it's great, and I think it's a I'm not necessarily going to call it a feeder into other events, but I think it's a feeder in the sense that I think people get hooked and maybe play some other stuff or try it again next year.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think it's great for all around for the poker community. I can't really even think of a bad side to it. I'm sure there are some people who are like, there shouldn't be bracelets for a $500 event, but I'm not buying into that.
You know, I think the ship has sailed on that. I think,
I
think for the most part, people are just, I would love to win a bracelet. Don't get me wrong. I would, I'd be pumped at a final table and if I was heads up and, had a shot at the bracelet, I would, aside from the money, really want it. But, I don't think there's a thing about bracelets like there was 10 years ago about they're rare or anything like that. That ship has sailed. They're giving them out for 70-person tournaments in Australia, right?
Right.
And it's just nothing against Australia. I was just talking about the size of the tournament.
Why do you hate Australia, man?
You know what? Australians are very well represented on TPE. They are a big. We have a big.
That's true, actually.
We love our Australian friends. What I just mean is that, in a tiny tournament, halfway around the world from where the thing originated, they're giving out bracelets. So I think the exclusivity of a bracelet is no longer what it was. So I have no problem with that. And if it gets people pumped, let's do it, right? Yeah. They're also doing – so I do – regret not being there that weekend because there's also another new type of event, the Hyper Hold'em, the limit. It's a two-day event. 1K buy-in, and I believe it's 20 minutes. Yeah, on day one, levels are 20 minutes. On day two, they're 30 minutes. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, which would be a lot of fun. Well, maybe. or you could be out in 40
minutes.
Yeah,
but what? That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have the money for it, right? If it's, if you can afford the bankroll. Being a U.S.-based player, being someone who doesn't play for full-time and a living and often will play after the kids are in bed, I absolutely love turbos now. I love late reg and I love turbos. And so I think it's great that they're offering this at the World Series now as well.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's one of many that we'll probably talk about before we're done here I think are really cool additions to the schedule.
We then will both be missing the Millionaire Maker, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, kind of a bummer, although there's so many other cool events that I'm kind of like, it's not as important to me. Kind of the same feeling about the Monster Stack, because that used to be such a cool tournament.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm going to miss that isn't as big of a deal to me, because now they've extended the chips on all the tournaments.
Yeah, that's actually worth saying. So what is the ratio now of chips?
5-1.
It used to be 3-1.
Yeah.
So for a $1,500 tournament, you're going to get 7,500 chips for five. That's great. I think I read somewhere that it doesn't impact the actual speed of the tournament for some reason.
Because I think they changed a couple of levels.
I don't know about it. I don't want to speak unintelligently.
Yeah,
I did read or hear somewhere that it's not going to really impact the length of the tournament. But I think people like to have more chips to start.
It's another good move towards bringing in, amateur, recreational, casual players.
People love the Monster Stack-ish thing. And, when you go in there for a 1K, you go in for a 1K, those 3K chips do not last very long.
No. So, you 3-bet once.
Yeah.
And,
We've talked about that.
And then have to fold. Yeah. You're out.
You get one three street line that doesn't go your way, and you're kind of in a weird spot. So I think that's great. I am pumped about that as well. A lot of other interesting tournaments that are, no limit. Obviously, there's the championships of the different formats. But when you get in, which you said is the 16th, what are you going to then be playing?
My first tournament will actually be which is another event that I'm stoked about, the Extended Play No Limit Hold'em. So it's basically a regular $1,500 buy-in event, but it's 90-minute levels.
Oh.
which should be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 90 minutes. Wow. So it's a 4-day event I see here, and 7,500 chips.
Yes.
Do you think all these deep stacks and extended plays are going to impact the main event?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Well, it could actually end up benefiting it because I think you're going to get a lot of people in for all these like kind of special events, like the Monster Stack, like the Colossus, and for the people who who sort of quote unquote min cash for like 4,500 or 5K, might just roll it into the main event.
Yeah, they got to come back. The people who would do that.
Well, that's true.
They're here for one trip probably only, and it's tough.
Yeah. So yeah, I wonder if like a lot of people. I mean, I can see if I were a casual player, I might go, wow, there's all these cool events. I think I'm going to not play the main, right, and I'll play five other really cool, like, 1,500 in one case.
Well, I guess the question is, how much of the main event, what percentage of that is that type of player versus, I mean, if you assume 7,000 people play the main event every year, are 4,000 going to play it no matter what, and 3,000... doing it opportunistically or what? I guess you'd have to think about it that way.
That's a good question. It will be interesting to see. I mean, if there's a huge drop or a huge increase in the main event participants, I'm sure people will point to the schedule, right?
Yeah.
They'll go, it was because of all those other events that there weren't as many or there were more or whatever. Right. But
well, let's I want to talk about the main event in a little more detail in a second. So let's get to that. So, it just looks like there's a bunch of standard tournaments between that and then when I get in. But I'm actually pretty pumped about – I'm coming in for the start – the first tournament I'm going to play is on the 27th. It's the DraftKings 50-50 No Limit Hold'em. I am pretty pumped about the schedule of tournaments that week. Every day there is a 1,500 or 1K for 5 days in a row. Which is pretty sick for the buy-ins for someone who plays those types of buy-ins. That's pretty sick to have that many in a row. I actually think that's the perfect week for to come in if you're not if you're looking to get I've played a bunch of tournaments before and 7K for two tournaments if it's
right.
kind of frustrating or you play the main event and there's 10K on one tournament, so it's such variance. Not that these don't have variance, but getting so you got the DraftKings 50-50, which the format of that is that 50% of the field is paid, and it's not a double or nothing like I first originally thought.
Right.
They pay 50% of the field, and then it's a once they get past that, it's basically accelerated payouts just like any other tournament, which I think is an awesome format because I think it gets a lot of people in there to play that might have been apprehensive otherwise.
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of people just going, I just want to cash in a World Series event, and this is my best chance, so I'm in.
I still take the position that I think for the poker economy's health, they should pay more places. So mixing these in to reduce the variance for folks, I think is a great thing. So I think
it's going to be great, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what the bubble is like. Like, when does that start? Well, how soon do people start knitting up, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, if you think about it, they can't pay... So, like, if they were to just pay everyone, they would 50. If they paid 50% and stopped, they would just double up, right? So,
right.
If they're gonna make it interesting, they haven't announced the payout structure yet. I don't think.
I don't believe they have.
But if they're gonna make it interesting for people, they still have to have something interesting up top. So, I actually think because they're paying so many people, the min cash is gonna be below, maybe even below the buy-in.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's going to be one of those things where a min cash is like $500 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that might be the case. I mean, maybe you get it to 1K. It's like a little bit of a better feeling for people.
Yeah, it could be.
And then because, you do that, let's say you got 4,000 people and, it's a 1,500 event. So 600,000, 6 million in the prize pool, right? Am I doing that math right? Let's see.
That seems right.
If you got 4,000 people times 1,500, I doubt they're going to get that much. But yeah, that's 6 million. And then you pay them all 1,000. you pay 50% of them $1,000, so you got $2,000, so you got $2 million. So there's still $4 million to distribute to the next 50%. And depending on how they scale it up, I mean, they could probably go really tightly scaled for the, you know, until they get to the top 100 and then accelerate. So I think I like that format because I think it reduces the variance. I like to see more tournaments like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun one.
Yep. And then they got a 1K on Sunday, typical 1K, but this time with 5K chips, a 1500 on Monday, which they usually don't do. So that's pretty cool that you got that right there. 7500 chips, once again, they usually don't do that on Monday. So, you know, once again, for someone like me who's coming out there and wants to get as many tournaments in as possible, it's nice that you get that. And then they got the little one-for-one drop on Tuesday with two flights, and that's a 1K tournament, or 11-11 with the charitable donation.
Right.
And then even on Wednesday, you have a bounty no limit, which is, once again, another variance reducer. You get player bounties worth $500.
Which is actually, God, it might even be the tournament I'm most looking forward to. Really? I love bounties. Really? Yeah, I don't know why. I've always loved bounties. I like the way it makes certain people play.
Yeah.
You know, people start gunning. They see that $500 chip, and they're like, I want it, and they make loose calls. Maybe it's because I've always been a nit. So, like, I tend to get it in good in those situations a lot.
Yeah.
But, I'm really looking forward to that event for some reason.
Yeah, me too. So we got five straight days of 1K or $1,500 buy-ins with some variance reducers there. Pretty pumped about that. I'm flying out on the second unless I make a day two or day three of that bounty. But continuing on, the WSOP.com is having an online. Why don't you talk about that? You're playing. Yeah, I'm assuming you're going to be playing that.
Yeah, I'm going to play that for sure. It's a 1K buy-in. It's the first, of course, ever online bracelet event. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be cool for a bunch of reasons. I mean, one, it sort of, I think, adds like some legitimacy to online poker in everybody's eyes. It's going to, I think, you know, get a lot of people to sign up for WSOP.com to play. Granted, you know, you got to be in Nevada to play on it, but it's going to obviously add some people into that player pool. And anytime you can increase the player pool on these online sites, it's good in my mind. Yep. And I just think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch because I think you're going to have like, I mean, you're going to be able to literally pull up tables where, you know, Phil Helmuth is sitting and Daniel Negreanu is sitting and Daniel Cates is sitting.
You know? You're right. That's right. I didn't think about that. They're all going to be playing online that day.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be a lot of fun to watch and to play. And it'll just be cool to be playing that big of an event where you actually have a chance to win a bracelet. It'll be a lot of fun. I know it'll be a cool day sitting in the house with, you know, like three or four other guys all playing it at the same time and just having a blast.
And they're doing the heads up live, right, the next day?
Yeah, and I know there's been a push, which I agree with. I think in my mind it would be perfect if they played down to the final table and then did the final table live.
I just don't understand why. I don't understand why they wouldn't do that.
It seems weird to me, especially because there's a decent chance that it gets down to heads up, and it's a 10-to-1 chip lead or something, and you literally have to set up, you know, this whole big thing to have two guys come in and play for 4 minutes when the guy shoves his, you know, 10 bigs in and gets called.
I mean, 100% agree with that, but I just don't even understand why you wouldn't have a whole final table come back regardless of that, like just the pomp and circumstance of it all. You know, you got some. Online transfer some of the online goodness to live, but 9x it instead of 2x it, right? Like just this is a bigger deal.
I don't understand.
Not really
going to
impact. Like, I mean, a final table could take, you know, 8 hours or 10-12 hours to play, but that's okay. I don't get it. What are they doing with the blind level timing when they get live? Do you know?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't think they've released the structure sheet for that event.
Yeah,
because
it plays so differently, right? Like, let's say it's 20-minute levels online. I mean, that's a hyper turbo and live. So,
I wonder if that's one of the reasons why they went all the way to heads up is because they didn't want to have to like change the structure or whatever.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard, right? You just make it instead of 20-minute levels, you make it 2-hour levels or hour levels or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make it hour levels and you're fine. I mean, that's roughly equal to like a 20-minute online level, right? I mean, it's like online. I think you get like 23 hands typically live per hour.
Right.
So
seems right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, don't know. Are you saying there's a movement? People are kind of petitioning to change it?
I mean, it's I wouldn't call it an organized movement, but it's just the most like the most common thing I see saying or said about that event why are they doing that? Why don't they do a full final table? And I haven't seen any response from the WSOP or from anybody like that about
WSOP. A lot of if you listen, we Turn Poker Edge endorses bringing everyone back.
We implore you.
We implore. Wow.
We deplore.
No, we don't deplore them. Okay, and then there's another new format, a Lucky Sevens, one re-entry per player, per flight. There's two flights, and you could have a re-entry in each of the flights, and it's a $777 buy-in, another new lower buy-in, kind of gimmicky tournament. I find that interesting, too.
Yeah, I think this one's kind of cool. Like, to me, it's not quite as exciting as some of the others, but it is right before the main event.
Yeah, at the end, too, right? So it's kind of...
Yeah, so it's something cool for people to just go fire a bullet at, like before they play the main or something like that.
Yeah, you got a lot of people doing that to kind of warm up for the main. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that, like, we've talked about this before. Like, it's a really good idea if you're going to go play, a WSOP event, especially the main event, to like get a tournament in as a warm up, and this is a perfect one.
Yeah.
If your one tournament is you're playing the main, you might as well get there 2 days early and play this, and just get comfortable with the surroundings and all that stuff.
Yeah,
I think it's a cool. I think it's a cool event.
Although that may be mitigated in a sense that a lot of the people who do that once again come in for 1C, and may not be doing that on the third, and then. But I don't know. I don't have any data to back that up. So. It's possible. But that's the regular schedule. And then we get into the main event, which is once again another 10K buy-in, as usual, and three starting days. And what I find interesting is that this time they're guaranteeing payouts to 1,000 places, which I love. My thoughts on that. And the final table players receive at least 1 million, which I like too, actually, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you make the main event final table, I'm guessing that's going to come off the top. Is that? I mean, I don't know.
I would think so. Unless their whole thing is that they're going to flatten it all out a lot, because they're paying 1,000 places. Also, maybe they're going to make it the min cash a little less.
Right, because the min cash is usually what, like 19K.
Yeah, I think it's right around 19.
Right.
So they could easily make it,
17. Yeah, and no one cares.
No
one's going to care. So I think it's great. I think you do all those things. And if, it was 10 million last year, obviously that's more than it typically is. What is it usually, about 8 million for first place?
I think so.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I say make first place 6 million and use that in other places. I don't think anyone would complain about winning that much money.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, yeah. So I think overall, really good job by the World Series this year in the schedule.
Yeah, I would say 99% of the chatter I've seen on Twitter and in the forums and stuff is positive. Like, people seem to really like all the changes. So.
Yeah.
I have seen a little bit of negativity about the main event payout structure.
Oh, really?
But that's just pros trying to like get as much of the money up top as they can.
Yeah, right.
Which I understand. It's their career. They're trying to make money.
Yeah,
but. You don't make money if there's not money in the poker economy. So
that's right.
Spread the love a little bit, guys.
Absolutely.
But yeah, other than that, all positive. And I can't wait to get out there. I'm excited.
Cool. Me too.
So.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, so that's the plan for the summer. We should probably wrap it up and take a quick break. And then we will bring in our pro for the day to discuss a little bit of strategy.
Yep. And this is a pretty exciting segment that we're going to try here. So this is TPE Strategy Podcast Experimental, beta,
beta
version 1.0. We're going to go to Twitch, and we are going to do a live strategy session with Big Dog Pocket Fives on video. We're going to try our hardest not to make video influence the audio portion, and if we listen back to it and find that it detracts from the audio experience, we won't do it again, but... We actually think this is a pretty cool idea because we're going to do a TPE podcast live, which we could talk a second about this, and we'll talk about it more with Casey, but the Twitch phenomenon has just really taken over poker, and Casey is is certainly an influencer there. He's got his Twitch stream has got tons of followers, and Twitch in general has really become popular with poker players. So we're going to do this podcast on Twitch and see how it goes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun little experiment. And, you know, like you said, if it's a massive, colossal failure, we'll move on and not do it again. But it'll be a fun try. And if it works, great.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll see you guys in a bit.
Cool. We'll be right back with Big Dog Pocket Fives here on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
If you are looking for the best MTG training site on the planet, look no further than TournamentPokerEdge.com. Tournament Poker Edge focuses exclusively on multi-table tournaments and features some of the best live and online pros. No waiting for cash game videos looking for the occasional tournament video. Tournament Poker Edge also offers strategy articles, forums, a member chat room, and much more. So visit TournamentPokerEdge.com and start taking your game to the next level now.
Everyone, welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Time to bring in our feature guest, the man himself, the legend, Big Dog Pocket Fives.
Big What's Dog. Up, Sam?
There it is.
Breaking Twitch.
How you doing, buddy?
Hanging in there.
Nice, nice. Before we get into our strategy segment, it's been a while since we've had you on the show, so I think we should catch up with you. Exciting things have happened. I actually don't remember if it was pre or post your wedding the last time we talked on a podcast.
Probably pre.
I think so.
I think you're right. I don't feel like we've had a conversation. So how's married life?
Married life is good. Good. Can't complain. I mean, same as not married life, pretty much. But now it's official. Got a good nice dance party at the wedding out of it, and a nice honeymoon to Aruba out of it. But
that's sweet.
Other than that,
the wedding was a blast.
Yes, absolutely. You know how to throw a party.
Yeah, we've told you that personally, but let's just put it out here on the air. Yeah. The wedding was phenomenal.
Casey,
I'm glad you guys had
part.
A good time.
I learned more than I needed to know about Canadians at that wedding, but...
What happened? What the hell happened to you?
they're a bunch of fucking drunks up there, I tell you.
Well,
no, it was actually...
I personally gave all my friends a note saying, it's all inclusive. And in case you don't know, it's all inclusive, so drink your faces off.
And we did. There was something that I had. I'm never going to remember what it was, but it was some sort of bottle of like pink chocolate milk or like pink strawberry milk flavored vodka or something.
No, it was Tequila Rose.
Yes,
and I literally
Rose.
Got that just for my wife because I thought people might be getting shots, and I got, I think, tequila for me. And, at the end of it all, we ran out of Tequila Rose. I had to make the bartender leave and get more Tequila Rose. And, like, the tequila wasn't touched because you guys were all doing shots of Tequila Rose because it tasted like Pepto-Bismol. And it doesn't taste like anything, so it's easy to drink.
I will say that you guys know how to do a sing-along in Canada. I feel like we sang along for, like, four or five songs. Everyone hugging.
Yeah.
those nights.
KB still gives me the Blue Rodeo shout-outs every once
That's
in a while.
That's the one, Blue Rodeo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that song. I listen to it like once a week. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I've fallen in love with that song. I don't know if the band, I don't know if the rest of their songs are any good, but that song is great.
Blue Rodeo.
They have a couple, but, I mean, up in Canada, that's, you know, a Canadian favorite type thing.
Yeah. And for those listening, I will use that song as the outro song tonight, so you can I'll replace the old Poker Face cover with that song so you guys can hear what we're talking about. One other thing we should talk about is the fact that you have gotten pretty active in streaming on Twitch. Talk a little bit about why you decided to do that and how the experience has been so far.
I would say it's like 90% positive, 95% positive. A couple of the downsides is I've gotten drunk a couple times and made a little bit of a fool of myself. you know, I succumb to peer pressure pretty easily. So I've had a couple nights of getting pretty hammered on there. One was with Danny N13 when he was down for the WPT here in Niagara Falls. But mostly all the comments are really positive. I like playing on Twitch because it kind of, like, a lot of times, like, I've always tilted pretty hard. And, you know, it kind of keeps me under control. I still tilt a little bit and stuff like that. But it kind of keeps me under control a little bit. It breaks up the monotony of just sitting here looking at the screen, clicking buttons. I can look at the chat and talk about other things. So I like it. It's mostly positive for me.
Nice. Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I hang out a bit in your chat room, and I do a little bit of streaming myself, but not nearly the kind of volume that you do. And it's a pretty cool experience. I think it's going to be good for the poker world. I think it's going to bring a lot of new players into the game. From areas that maybe they weren't pulling from before. And it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, it's certainly growing really fast, as you can tell by your, you know, your follower count at this point.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started twitching, I maybe had, you know, 100 or 200 people watching me every time I twitched. And, you know, I've been as high as 2,500 now, you know. So it is definitely growing in popularity. There's a couple people on there that are way more popular than me, but I have my loyal followers who like to drink along and have a good time and play with me while I'm playing along. So it's awesome.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about the World Series of Poker. And, of course, we want to get into some strategy. Before we do either of that, the world wants to know, when are we going to get the treadmill emote?
Well, the treadmill emote is coming, but I cannot make more emotes until I have 250 subscribers now.
Oh, snap. They really ramp it up.
Yeah,
right?
You get 2 at 0, you get 4 at 25, you get 6 at 50, you get 8 at 100, which I just reached, and now I'm at 120, and so I need to get another 130 before I can do more emotes. But the treadmill will be the next one, you fuck.
I want the treadmill so bad. I wish they actually had, like, moving emotes so that it actually had, like, the tread moving on the treadmill. That would ravage hard.
One day I'm gonna talk to Staples on Skype, and I'm gonna be like, "Yo, host me," and I'm just gonna start on the treadmill. I'm just gonna be on the treadmill, sweat coming down. I'm just gonna be on there.
The funny thing was, somebody. This is way off topic, but speaking of you being running on a treadmill, when you were talking about the 10 push-ups the other day on Twitch,
yeah,
somebody was like, "I definitely do not believe that he could do 10 push-ups." And in my mind, I'm just thinking, like, all they see is your size. They don't realize how incredibly strong you are. And I know, because I've been punched
fast.
In gallbladder.
Fast, years. Too.
Yeah. Like, you're the most athletic 320-pound man I've ever met. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've been into sports my whole life, and I've always been super athletic. Like, I won an Ontario hockey championship at 20 years old at 250 pounds. Like, I've always been athletic, you know? Like, it's just something I've always been good at. I have quick hands. I played net. My glove and blocker hand were unbelievable. And, you know, I've worked out my whole life. I'm a fat man, but underneath this is like a chiseled mountain of a beast of a man, you know? But he's just hiding right now. He's just got me in hiding mode.
Well, it's winter.
Yeah, exactly.
He's staying insulated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm like a bear. Right now I've stocked up for the last 40 years, and right now I'm hibernating.
So I mentioned the World Series. Diego and I talked a little bit of it in the intro about the schedule and what's coming up and stuff. I know that everything for you is always a little bit in flux because, you know, you have your son and you got to kind of sort of balance the schedule and stuff like that. But what's your general plan for this summer for the World Series of Poker?
General plan is to go early because I was looking at the schedule and the early part of the schedule looks real good with the Millie Maker and the Colossus and all that shit, you know. So generally, I'll go early, and if I have some success early, I'll probably stay later than normal. I really can't give you much of an answer because I do not know.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, it's weird because it feels so incredibly close, but it really is still kind of far away. It's like almost 3 months away, but that seems close in
a lot.
Poker worlds. No, it'll come up quick, yeah. That's for sure.
I mean, so I'll probably play my $20,000-$25,000 in buy-ins and then see where I stand and then move on from there. That's what I always do.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see you at a World Series of Poker Final Table streaming. That, you're just going to crush that. It's going to be fun to watch. Like a no-hit hit him. Casey, I have as we move into the strategy segment, before we get to the hand, I have a general strategy topic. So I know you've been ramping up the volume lately, more so than you had in the previous months. How are the games lately? How are you finding, you know, what are the trends that you're seeing now? Like what are the strategic shifts? What's your impression of where the game is going?
Well, I've made a couple of shifts in my game just from, you know, transitions from, you know, when I won the millions and then took the year off and, you know, when I had my big, huge month. Since then, when I came back, I've noticed some things that I have to transition instantly. For example, for me, people are calling on me super, 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 super light. So if there's a spot now where I have like 14 bigs and ace 10 of spades or something, normally I would have ripped that just because, you know, I just want to rip my full range so people are calling lighter. If they don't know if I have aces or I have twos or whatever, I just was ripping my full range. But now I'm just like min-raising calling because people are ripping ace deuce and ace three on me and 9-4 on me and like all day long. Like it just seems like for whatever reason – you know, and right now I'm not holding, so it sucks, but I want this action. Like,
yeah,
I'm killing for this action. Like,
yeah.
If you watch my Twitch streams, I'll be like, oh, my God. Like today a guy limped the button. This is not a lie. This is not a lie. We're, like, 20 people off the money, and anybody watching this can verify this 100%. This guy limps the button, and I'm in the big blind with 20 bigs. I think I have 20 and a half bigs. He limps the big blind, and the small blind completes, and I rip. And I can't remember the hand I ripped, but I remember the hand he called with. But I ripped 20 bigs. I think it was with ace-10 of spades. Okay. Might have been ace-8 of spades or whatever the case may be. But I'm just like, look at this guy limping. What the hell is he doing? I rip. And he called with king-5 off.
Wow.
What?
That's
crazy. And I won that hand. I'm just like, what are these people doing? Like, so there's like a lot of stuff like that going on. And what happens now everywhere because of this, Ape Styles did all the math about defending out of the big blind and all this stuff. Everybody defends their big blind now. There was a point in the MTT world where everybody called me a fish. Every single person in the world called me a fish for defending too many big blinds.
Yeah.
Now everybody's doing it. Now it's the thing to do.
That's one of the first things I learned from when we started, when we met and I started watching your videos, is you just defended and you called down way more than most people did. And that was one of the big differences, I think, in your game back then from others.
Right. And everybody used to call me really fishy and spewy. And then now it's the thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, when I'd watch your videos,
it's difficult to play against, and it's frustrating too. So I also know why people always used to get so frustrated with me.
That is true.
Yeah.
It is really hard to do, like, to play against people when they're flatting that much. I've seen that trend as well, and I'm trying to do it myself, but it's hard to play against, for sure.
Well, when I'd watch, you know, one of your early videos, and I'd see you call down, you know, flop turn, and then the guy would give up on the river. And then you'd be able to take it down and be like, all right, I get it. But I think, you know what, people are getting that too. Not just me.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do it now on the key to that is doing it on less wet boards.
Yeah.
If it's a really wet board, it's hard to call and then bluff because people are like, he could be bluffing here because it's really wet. You know what I mean? He could have missed a drop. But if it's a dry board, you can still rep a lot of shit on the river. Like,
yeah,
you still have an edge if you know what you're doing post-flop. And I still feel like I have a huge edge on most of the fields. Just right now I'm on the run bad cycle. Like, I just can't win shit, you know. But I still feel like the games are very beatable. People are still gifting me chips. I just I'm not winning them.
Yeah.
You know?
That'll all turn around. Then you'll go on your run where you win two giant things back-to-back and we'll all be happy.
I mean, win the 9 mil on Sunday, no doubt.
That's going to be a fun one to watch for sure.
Yes.
I will be keeping my tables to a minimum so I can sweat that one.
Absolutely.
Just a little 9 million guaranteed, no big deal.
Just a million for first. Later.
What's that like? I was excited because for the first time in 5 years, we had a $1 million guarantee. Yeah.
We all played that.
I didn't play it.
But that's how it goes.
How many of you guys catch it?
So, yeah.
Either of you guys catch it?
Crickets. Later. Crickets. 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 Crickets.
Good thing you waited 5 years for that, Tony.
Oh. I actually had a profitable day on that from playing all the satellites to that. They were the softest things in the world.
Sure you did, Diego.
You were crushing the satellites that day. In fact, it was funny because you're like, I don't think I can play. Oh, just want a seat. Oh, I want another seat. Shit, I want another seat.
It was like the easiest thing ever.
Yeah, those satellites ravaged hard. Okay, so let's jump into a little strategy action.
All right, let's do it. All right. Blow my nose.
That is the siren for us to begin the strategy session.
That is the go button.
All right. So, KB, we may need to edit this on the podcast while we get a hand up on the Twitch stream. Show us. Let's figure this out.
We're gonna give it a shot.
KB is our guy in charge of tech right now, so brace
bear
yourself.
With us.
Yeah.
Bear fucking with us. Which site is the 9 mil guarantee on? Everybody wants to know, and I'm just going to shout that out. That is on Poker Stars.
Poker Stars in the house.
All righty. So it is up, and I think KB, you can scroll down to the actual hand history. I'll do the synopsis up top, and people can see the hand. Okay. So all right, Casey, we're ready for some strategy.
Okay.
This first hand is the title of the. Is slow played AA versus under the gun raise. So our hero here says he's played close to 100 hands with the villain, and over those hands, he's had a VP IP of 33%, a pre-flop raise percentage of 13, and an aggression factor of 1.5. I know you don't...
The villain has.
The villain has had that, yeah. Okay. And his EP pre-flop raise is 13%. He's seen him raise 3-3 and ace 10-0 from early position. They do have a little history. Played one hand with him early where he raised the hero, raised king 8 suited, 2.5x from the cutoff, and villain called from the big blind. He c-bet a bottom pair of 8s, and he flatted. Turn 1, check, check. Then he bet out on the river, making a pot-sized bluff with air, and I called him down with my lowly fourth pair. So villain is aware that hero can call light, and beyond that, he doesn't know what other perceptions he has. But that's the history. So this is the merge. OPS number 28, 25K guaranteed. I don't know what the buy-in on that is, but it's probably not that big. We are at 150-300 with a 30 ante. Our hero has 28K. So, yeah, he has 28K, so nearly 100 big blinds. And villain has nearly 11K. That is...
Nearly how much?
11K.
So, like 40 bigs?
40 bigs, yeah.
Okay.
And our hero is on the button. So, hero has ace-ace. And the villain min-raises to 600 from under the gun. It's five folds, and then from the button, the hero just flats here. Which I'll just raise my hand and say I think that's a mistake, given that it's an early position open. You could get stacks in here, or we're more likely to have a strong here, I would assume. What's your take, Casey?
Well, I mean, granted, like, everything I say is from the big dog dynamic, which isn't always the same as everybody else's dynamic. I have a reputation of being pretty aggressive and pretty spewy, so here I'm definitely not going to just flat, because I can 3-bet here and get, induce action from absolute rags. And also, given the fact that he did raise an early position, not only is there a chance he raises again with ultimate, like, absolute rags, he might have an actual hand. So
yeah.
I probably make it like 1750 or 1700 here.
Yeah. Yeah. I that's my gut too. You know, the hero says he chose to slow play his aces for several reasons. He has position on his opponents. He might induce a squeeze from one of the blinds, which I disagree with. I don't think you get that many squeezes over an undergun opener. I have the best hand. I'm going to have the UTG razor dominated. Didn't want to push him out of the hand with marginal hands, and he's fairly short stacked, indicating to me that he'd want to stack off somewhat lighter post-flop.
I mean, some of that is true, but also given the fact that they've had a dynamic, it's even more reason to 3-bet. But anyways.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's move on and play it as played.
Yep. So as played, the big blind also comes along. So you got 3 to the flop. In the pot now is 2,220. The flop is Jack of Diamonds, 6 of Clubs, and the 6 of Hearts. Hero has an Ace of Hearts, not too super relevant here. Big blind checks. Our under the gun opener goes 300 into a pot of 2,220. So what would you do here at this point, Casey?
Well, I mean, you definitely want to – I mean, it's not a very wet board. There's not a lot of draws on the board. But you definitely want to start building a pot. And you also probably only want to play the pot heads up. So I would definitely be raising here, like maybe make this, like, again, 1,500.
Yeah, I agree. KB, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would want to raise too, just like Big Doug said, to get some chips – into this pot, because we eventually want to get all the chips in the middle, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it by just flatting 300. Like, if he had led, you know, 1350 or something, maybe I could just flat, but I want to put some chips in the middle, although this seems a little... I mean, it's not necessarily big relative to the pot size, but it's pretty big relative to the bet, so I think you could go maybe a little bit smaller, like maybe make it like 1200 or something.
I mean, that's what I was going to say as well. I don't know if there... I mean, it's probably not a huge mistake either way, but I would think for the same reasons that KB was saying here, if this guy's just got crap and he's just... I don't know what he's doing, 1500... is more likely to scare him away than 1,200, maybe even 1,100 if you want to just keep them in, since it's such a dry board. I don't know. I guess you can go either way on that.
I think either way is fine, but you have aces. Yeah. Let's build the fucking pot.
Yeah, I think we definitely got to build the pot. It's just a matter of, I guess, how much we build it now. But I'm trying to see if we can get all the money in the middle by making it a little less.
Okay, So our hero does make it 1,500, just like Casey says. The big blind folds.
I didn't read that, by the way.
Yeah, I trust you. I usually don't. So the big blind folds and the original raiser and the guy who led in calls. So now we're going to the turn, and it's the pot is 5,220. So what do we got behind here? They've put in about... Let's see, 1,500 and 6, so about 2K. So about 8K effective stacks. We're at 5,220 in the pot. It's another dry card. It's a 3 of clubs. And the...
So Jack 6, 6, 3, 4 different suits, right?
Correct. And the villain checks. So now it's check to the hero here. I think you're obviously... betting here. What's a good size? I'll take a stab here and tell me what you think. So if there's 52 in and we're 8K behind, I'd probably go like 25, 26. What do you think? What sizing are you thinking?
I mean, anywhere from 23 to 3,000. I mean, depending if you're, you know, if you want to make it a little bit lower so it looks like... If you think he's the type of guy, you know, I may make it like 2,100. If you think he might be the type of guy just to tool out, but he needs enough fold equity in his mind.
Right.
Like, if you make it like 3,500, he might be like, oh, geez, I don't have enough to push him off. He's committed. So if you make it like 2,100, it's kind of shady. He may decide to shove. So I think anywhere around, you know, 2,100 to 3,000 is fine anywhere in there, depending on what you want to do.
I guess what's this, like, what I'm trying to think of here is what's the smallest I can make it that would leave stacks behind, that we could still get stacks in on the river, right?
Well, I mean, I think 2,100 accomplishes that, because that's going to make the pot 9,500 with probably 6,000 back each.
Right. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Right.
So
right.
I think 2,100 is the perfect bet, to be honest with you.
Yeah. KB, what do you usually do here?
I like the amount 2,100 a lot. I don't know that I would go exactly there, but, you know, 2,000, 2,200, somewhere in that range. But I think that's just about the right amount. I mean, it looks like I could tell by the action that Shuktu Renan has 8,500 left. So by us making it almost 4K, I mean, we're making ourselves look super committed, whereas if we make it like 21, it looks like we can almost fold. I mean, some players might be good at
that.
Thanks for saying the exact same things I said, KB.
So, KB, can you just repeat what Big Dog said for everyone who's watching, just in case they didn't get it?
What I would do is everything that Big Dog said.
Big Dog. Whatever Big Dog says, that's what I hear an echo. All right. So to recap, I agree. I think for two reasons, giving him the illusion of fold equity if he shoves, and it's still the right amount to get a shove in the river for the rest of the stack. So I think we all agree. Hero makes it 3,900, which I think is a mistake for the reason that KB added in. It does look like there's less. No fold equity here, and it's not as effective as for the other reasons.
You mentioned that, KB, you said?
What? Did you have an opinion on this hand?
I'm so smart.
Whoever says it last gets the credit.
Okay. Way to go, KB.
All right, so Hero makes it 3,900, and the villain shoves regardless, so he still got his chips. And Hero calls. I actually don't know what he had here. Let's see. KB, do you know the result here?
I don't think he.
Oh my god!
It,
are you guys
honest.
Being serious? This is the hand you picked. There's no result.
What's the
this
result?
This is why you guys
matter?
Run this shit by me before you.
No. Okay. The exciting
conclusion. Oh, the exciting conclusion, guys.
Over 7-6
I mean,
off.
I was gonna say it feels like a bad beat because why else would this guy post it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was exactly.
But I mean, the 7-6 off is exact reason why. Another reason, anyways, that you 3-bet pre because it narrows ranges a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not that likely to call 7-6 off out of position. I guess technically you want the action if you know he has 7-6 off and you have aces. You don't want to put him out, but just for range purposes, that's why it's kind of a good idea to 3-bet for that reason as well.
Yeah. I think if most of the time, even if you get 7-6 to come along, or I guess what did he just flatted, didn't 3-bet, you're just not going to get much from 7-6 post-flop, right? So it's not like you're really giving up that much of the opportunity that you're trying to get when you get lucky. He just hits something, a small piece of the board, he'll still probably fold after two streets.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree totally with KB, do you want to just give a synopsis of what me and Diego just said there?
No, this is why I think it's important to 3-bet here, because it narrows the range a little bit. I do agree. I mean, I think there's times for playing aces like this. I'm just not sure was the spot, to be honest. I think if it's... I feel like we're... Well, I was going to say I feel like we're a little too deep, but...
I mean...
Yeah, I do. I think we're just too... Like, if villain has, like, 18 bigs, then we can, like, flat and just, like, get in all boards and stuff. But this seems a little too shallow to be...
Especially given the fact that they have...
Or,
history,
I'm sorry, a little
like,
too...
I definitely like the 3-bet here every time.
It's all great.
Yeah.
And I think...
I like a 3-bet here every time.
All right.
That's
so 3-bet
to get old.
Some sizing... some bet sizing issues on that hand too, so I think some good things to pick up there from
yeah,
now.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Let us do the next hand. All right.
Let's do it.
Let's let KB go first.
All right, KB. You're gonna do this one.
This might be a bad one for me to do.
Why is
I'll
that
do a different one.
Any hand?
Well, it requires some in-depth analysis that I don't know if I'm capable of doing while managing the screen that's happening.
Okay, just repeat after me.
Yeah. I'm trying to chew bubblegum at the same time here.
Let me
have a break. So we're going to skip to this one. This is from TPE member Folding Aces Pre, yo, which seems like a bad idea in general. This is from
KB,
the 888.
I think you should. I don't think we should do this hand because it's a cash hand. I think the other hand that we collected was better. We have two more hands. Yep.
Showers.
Can't
even do that hand because of the name. We can't do anything from a guy who names himself Folding Aces Pre.
GG.
Maybe can't even.
That's like naming yourself having sex without my dick. It's just not something you do.
Don't even know what he's talking about. That's a good one. Right?
Okay, just got real real. Okay, let's do this. This one is from Never AA. Wait, another guy that hates aces apparently.
He just says he never gets it.
Ah, okay. Fair enough. This is in an 888 tournament as well. It's a $30 tournament. $2,730 plus $270. Looks like we are at $1,200, $2,400, so we are pretty deep. I'm trying to figure out, this is a weird hand history. Mr. KK is the hero? Yes, okay. Mr. KK is the hero, so we're in the big blind. We have 23 big blinds.
Doesn't give, chip counts. They just give you big blind sizes, so we'll just have to deal with that. Yep.
Fair enough. What's going on with 888 anyway in their hand history?
Well, I mean, review. We could figure out how much the money is since we know the big blind is 20%.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, maybe so if we were good
Casey,
at math,
you and I will
could.
Do that well because I don't think KP can handle another thing.
No, I have no capability of doing that. All right, so, but what we do know is that Hero is in the big blind with the A6 offsuit and 23 big blinds. We see a fold. And then the villain in this hand, who has 43 big blinds, raises. Looks like a min raise to me. Folds around to us.
Raise?
The hero and the big. Okay. Under the gun plus one. Again, folds around to us in the big blind with our 23 big blinds and the A6 offsuit, and we decide to. In this hand history, the villain or the hero decides to flat. I assume we're flatting here every time to a min open, even from under the gun. Yeah, seems to make sense. So we go to the flop.
Let me just play devil's advocate on that one for a second.
Sure.
So, I mean, are we going to love our life if we face three streets with an ace high flop, which I'm guessing might happen here?
I don't think we're ever facing three streets with 22 big blinds on an ace high flop.
Okay. All right.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, fair point. I mean, I flat here 100%
of
the time.
Now, this is one of the things that you brought up earlier, how the game's changed. And every single person is defending this now to a min raise, every person.
Yeah, fair.
Right. Fair. And every other hand, not just this, right? Like king 5.
But this hand, definitely, yeah.
Jack 8.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So, yeah, we defend. The flop comes ace 8-3 with two spades. Again, we have the 8-6 off, but no spades in our hand. Ace 6 off, but no
spades
in our hand.
By the way, there's about 12.7K in the pot. I'll just convert it for you.
Yes. Glad we have the math guy here.
Use a calculator.
We check, which I think is what I would do. Would you just check here, Casey?
Like, absolutely.
All the
time? No reason to start floating the pot.
Yeah.
Agreed. Villain bets 2.13 big blinds. Diego, how much chips is that?
5,100-ish?
You need help doubling something?
Yes, I do. That seems about right to me. It's not the two I have trouble with. It's the one. It's the.
I'm guessing it's about 5,100, right?
Yeah,
that seems just about right. I mean, okay, so I guess the question here then becomes, raise. I mean, we're never folding. So is it just a raise? Do we raise here, or do we just flat to sort of pot control? We are in position, so we can kind of play the turn pretty. We're not in position. Sorry, out of position. But yeah, I'm just wondering if
we
should
ever raise
just here.
I'm not prepared to get my 20 bigs in just yet. With this point, with top pair, I know there's two spades on the board, but 8 and 3 seem pretty innocuous. I'm probably just gonna call here.
Yeah, and it means you don't give him a chance to bluff the next street either if you get it in.
Yeah, true. We fold out. We basically, if we raise, we only get card. Right.
Yeah, I just feel like our hand has way too much value to be turning it into a bluff on the first street here.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, fair enough. So we go to a turn. The turn is the 10 of diamonds. So now the board reads ace, 8, 3, 10, 2 spades,
and we have,
2 diamonds.
We have one diamond, right?
We do have one diamond, the 6 of diamonds. Checking again here,
yes.
Big Dog?
I thought this was one of the interesting spots then, because of the double draw, right? What is the best way to get your chips in and also protect against the draws, Casey? You think we're going to get a check raise?
Even if I'm worried about the draw, I'm still check raising.
Yeah.
Because I'm still going to have fold equity if I check raise. If he has a draw, I still have enough fold equity. If I check and he bets like 5 or 6 bigs, I still can shove, you know, another 12 bigs on top of that if he was to bet 6, and have plenty of fold equity for him to be folding a draw with one card to come. So I'm still checking this, not worried about the draws.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I agree. I'm just wondering if, you know, the times he checks behind, are we then not able to get it in?
Well, yeah. I don't think we necessarily want to get it in. We're pot controlling this
right.
pot for a reason. So
okay.
I think him checking behind is I'm perfect. I would prefer him to check behind.
Okay. Yep. Okay. All right. That's what
to be honest with you.
Yep.
So when you say you prefer he checks behind, does that mean you're only check calling here, or are you gonna check raise?
Well, I mean, if I'm worried about the draws, if I'm thinking, okay, this guy's mm-hmm. drawing and he's double barreling Harold me because he has king queen of diamonds or something, then I may check shove. But if I just think he's a tool and just doing whatever he's doing to, you know, double barrel Harold because he has, you know, queen jack of spades and really just a gutty or whatever, I'm just going to call because I want to give him as many chances to make more mistakes on a later street as possible. So
yeah.
It kind of depends on the player, and this hand is in a vacuum. So, I mean, I'm probably, without having any information, just going to check call here.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. All right, so that is exactly what the hero in this hand does. The villain bets 4.79 big blinds. Diego?
Well, so we started the hand with...
So he bets 11K.
Yeah.
It's like 11 not... something-ish. And hero calls.
Right.
The river comes the 4 of hearts. So just as a reminder for those listening, the board now reads ace, 8, 3, 10, 4. 2 spades, 2 diamonds. The 4 is of hearts, so it does not complete any flushes. And again,
this
it's on
is
us.
A million,
I
million
assume.
Percent the one street I'm really confident on, a check. Because if he was drawing, the only way we're going to get value
That's
out
right.
of this hand now is to fucking let him bluff.
That's right, 100%.
So this is a check, a no-brainer check every single time.
Yep. You're never going to get anything from worse. So just so you know, there was 45K in the pot. So I think we're what do we have left here? Not near 40. Not near that. So
yeah, I see. You know, on the river, we check. Villain bets 14.3 a big blind, so I'm guessing that basically puts us
it
on
does.
Or does.
Yeah.
So he basically shoves the river.
We have
33K
behind. So he shoves, which I think is what the action we want to induce here. 100%. So call 100 every time, right?
Well, I mean, he did three barrels, so I wouldn't say I'm calling here 100% of the time. I mean, a lot of times we're going to be beat. If I think he's drawing and missed and capable, I'm definitely calling. But if, like... Again, in a vacuum, an absolute vacuum, I think it's okay to call here because he's going to be shoving bluffs. But, I mean, I'd sure like to have a note on this guy or some sort of dynamic to realize if he's capable of three barreling with air or if, you know, if he's really tight, obviously it's a fold. But in a vacuum, I guess, yeah, call here is fine because he's just going to miss some draws.
Yeah. I was going to say, Big Dog, I think – I was assuming you were going to say something about the read on the player because I think this river really does come down to the villain, like your read
right.
on the villain in a big way. If he's the kind of guy capable of barreling three streets with a draw or with kings or something like that, then it can be a call. But if the guy's running like 12-10, for those of you using a, you know, if he's just a super knit,
well,
then
there's
I
zero
don't
chance
know
he has kings.
If I'm calling here,
he's checking back the turn with kings. That'd be fine.
Yeah, that's
I would
what I just started thinking of. I mean, what is he shoving here that's not a great ace or a draw, right? So he's got to have a better
ace. He should
be
really
ace.
Only shoving ace-king, maybe ace-10, obviously, because there's a 10 on the board, right?
Yeah.
And all sets.
Yeah.
You know, I doubt he's shoving ace-jack.
Right, and then how many draws, busted draws, does he really have here? I mean, it's just the spades, and would he have... I mean, would he have bet the three? I guess he could bet the flop. Definitely, he would bet. I guess he would bet the turn with the.
If I had two spades in my hand, I could see myself definitely bringing out triple barrel Carol here to keep repping.
Especially if if he had exactly like the king queen of spades or king jack of spades, because that's a great
hand
to barrel.
I agree, but how many draws does he really have in his? Like, how often does he have a draw here?
Right.
Well, I mean, I think it. How many aces is he shoving is the better question, because he's obviously shoving ace 10, ace 6, ace 8, ace 3, ace king. But how many others is he shoving? Is he shoving ace queen? I don't know, because it certainly looks like we have an ace at this point. So how many aces is he beating?
Yeah.
He's only beating ace 9, ace 7, ace 6, ace 5, ace 4, ace deuce. Because the other ones all make two pair or I have a bigger ace.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like most of the time it's a set or a bluff. It's a set, a bluff, or ace 10.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Right.
Reveal, KB.
I'm not telling. No, I'm just kidding. So we did call. Yes, we or the hero in this hand calls, and the villain had ace 10.
Set.
For the turn
set,
to two pair.
Ace 10 or, that's exactly what I said, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's what I said.
A set, ace 10, or
it's a tough spot.
Yeah.
That's what I said. And he had one of the ones that beats us. I don't think it's a bad call.
I think that I don't think it's necessarily a bad call. I think the river's super villain dependent to me. Like, that's a spot where you have to, I mean, you're a pro at this, Big Dog. Like, you're so good at, like, knowing where you are in a hand. And I actually think in the action, you might find a fold here. I'm not sure I would.
I mean, I'm not sure I would either. But, I mean, you had to see the other night when I folded top set. Like, it just depends. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
I pulled a king queen on king, king, 9-7 deuce the other day. Rainbow. Like, you know.
Wow,
just because, it's just the way the hand played out, it looked like I was bluff counting. So, it just depends, you know?
Yeah.
Cool. Did you see the result in that hand, by the way, Casey? Of the king,
the guy
queen hand? I mean, did you...
Yeah, so I didn't
show. Okay. I was just curious. Yeah. All right, cool. Let's move to another hand.
Let's do the We Cry fold, a set in this thread.
All right. Here we go.
So Jacob Shark Tank, a very popular TPE member, posted this one.
Yep.
Hey, guys, this is near the bubble in a 33, maybe 6K in the prize pool. Okay, so he's going to say he chose to limp this spot. He feels like the cutoff or button would attack a limp with a wide range. Just so you guys know, he limps 8-8. I'll go through the details of the hand in just a second, but he's referring to limping 8s from middle position. He thinks
horrible
cutoff
idea,
button... He thinks the cutoff or button would attack a limp with a wide range, being in position on the bubble. He doesn't have many limps in his game, but occasionally throws them in, he says. All right. So the
throw them out,
hand,
Jacob. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So the hand here is on WPN Network. It's 600, 1,200 blinds, 120 ante. There's 8 players at the table. Hero has 35K, which is about 30 big blinds. Just under, and the villain in this hand is the big blind that has 48K, which is 40 big blinds. Hero is MP3 with 8-8. There are 3 folds. Hero limps, as we said earlier. So, Casey, not a fan of that. Want to give us your reason?
I have almost no limps in my game. I mean, sometimes I'll over-limp if I have a really sexy hand like Queen Ten of Diamonds or something, and I'm in late position, and I think there's not going to be, you know, any squeezes or anything like that. But for the most part, I'm probably just going to raise here, but as played, eights limped.
Yeah, I think, once again, I think Jacob has had some success here, so you know, to take this with a grain of salt. The line I don't like, and his explanation is, an attempt to mess with opponents' games. I mean, is that... I know it confuses people a little bit, but if it's strategically unsound, I think you may be doing more harm to yourself than messing with other people's games.
Well, I'll tell you right now, when I see somebody limp and then I raise and then I call, I always say, well, that guy has a pair and he's trying to hit a set.
Yeah.
So I think if by anything, by limping, it seems like a mid to small pair.
Right.
Almost every time that you're limping. But anyways, that's just what I think when I'm playing against people.
I think that's typically the perception. So if you're trying to mess with someone's games, don't do it with the hand that most people limp with, right?
Right.
Okay. So anyway, we get the rationale. So as played, hero calls, limps, three folds, the big blind just checks. So we're going to a flop, 39-60 in the pot, and hero hits a set. Eight of hearts, two of diamonds, jack of hearts.
Okay, so mid-set.
Mid-set, and the big blind leads out 2,400 into 3,960. Okay, so let's stop there for a second. What are people typically leading out here, Casey? This is, you know, it's always kind of a weird when they lead into you here off of a limp. It's kind of a situation I don't find myself in that often, so I'm not quite sure how to process it.
I mean, it's happening more and more in today's game, but there's two hearts on the flop, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it seems like it should be a jack or a flush draw every time. So, yeah.
Or like a 9-10 maybe?
I guess 9-10 is also a good enough draw to be leading out there. But either way, it makes me feel like he has value of his hand. So I'd probably be raised building a pot here.
Yeah, right. He's always got value, I think, right?
Yeah.
He's got something here, right? And something that you don't want to just let get away cheaply. See an next trade, right? Yeah.
I mean, maybe even a jack deuce or a jack eight because it was a limp pot, so it's really impossible to narrow his range. It's literally any two.
Right, and you got 30 bigs, so you're going to want to do something to start to build that pot up. You know, you want to get chips in.
Especially on this board, that even if he doesn't have, like, two pairs or, you know, like ace-jack or something, like, there's so many hands that connect with this board.
I doubt even ace-jack.
Nine, ten of hearts.
He's probably not going to nibble in the big blind with a, you know what
no
I
doubt.
Mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I do think.
Yeah. But it can be, you know, it can be queen, ten of hearts.
Yeah, I think
it
could.
Like all broadways.
It could be absolutely
hearts.
Anything because we didn't raise pre, and I don't know why. But it literally could be jack deuce.
Yeah, yep.
Like there's a lot of reasons to be raising. Great.
Yep, so just almost everything he's leading out, he's going to want to stay invested in the pot, whether it's whether he jams or he just calls you. Okay.
Right.
Cool. So hero does raise. He raises to 7K. Let's look at the stack sizes here for a second. So he raises to 7K. That gives us a total of about 82 from our stack in. So that's going to leave us with 27K. And if the villain calls, it's going to be about 18K in the pot. So I think we do have the right ratio to get it all in by the river, if that's what we're trying to do. But what kind of, like, how do you feel? Like, is that, like, should we be going a little bit bigger? Like, what's
no, I think that's actually probably a pretty good raise. If he has some of those hands, like Jack's deuce, the guy's probably going to shove.
Yeah.
If he has something like 9-10, the guy could shove. He could just peel with 9-10. But I feel like that's a pretty good sizing. That's pretty good sizing right there.
Yeah, and I think if he makes it like 9 or 8K, not 8 or 9 or 10K, he could find a fold from his more marginal stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And that might just induce him to call maybe something a little weaker. Okay. Yeah. KB, what do you think? Casey, you want to just answer for him?
I agree with Casey. I would raise here a bunch, and I like this sizing, to be honest. I think it's about exactly where I would go.
All right. Well, the big blind just does indeed call us. So we're going to the turn now. We got 18K in the pot. It's the queen of diamonds. So we have eight of hearts, jack of hearts, two of diamonds, queen of diamonds. So we have, you know, a little bit, obviously a very wet board. The big blind checks to us, and it's to the hero now. And like I said, I think he's got about 27K behind. So, you know, what are we thinking here in terms of a bet size? Like, my gut, I'd go like 9K here, I think.
Well, I mean, it depends on your objective, but I think 9K seems a bit right. Maybe just a little bit heavy, but 8,100 maybe?
8,100, okay. And that'll leave us with, let's see, that'll make the pot 34K with 17 behind or something like that. 19 behind. Yeah. KB, what do you think?
I like about 8,100. no, I actually, I don't know if this is a mistake, but I tend to go like pretty small here, and it might be a mistake, to be honest. Like,
well, if he's drawing, you don't want to give it.
I think
if
I was playing this exactly.
Yeah,
I agree, and that's why I'm actually questioning.
A little bit wetter, you know, with that queen.
Yeah,
and that's why I kind of qualified it by saying that I think it might be a mistake. Like, my first instinct was to go, like, honestly, maybe even a little bit smaller than our hero did in this hand. Like, I might go, like, 6,500.
Did you say what he bet already?
And I think that's a mistake.
No, I didn't, but he went...
So I think, yeah, I would probably go, like, my instinct is to go smaller, but I think it's kind of a mistake.
I mean, I think 69 is, if the guy is drawing, it's still enough for him to be calling. There's still 19 behind.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, so he raises, but he doesn't ship it. He raises it to 15.6K. And so... Now, are we going to ship or just call?
Well, I mean, there's no point just calling here now. He just made it 15.6, right? There's a small percentage that the guy is just full of shit and he folds if we shove. Makes it plus EV. I think the only hand we're losing to is 9-10 because that completed. But even if he has 9-10, we have a set there and we have a lot of outs to win the pot. So even if he has 9-10, I still think we're getting the right price just to fucking get it in. I'm never folding here.
Right.
Like, folding seems like the totally wrong play.
Yeah.
Because there's also hands that we're beating that this guy's going to do this with. For example, queen jack or king queen of hearts or, you know, some other draw, like a pair in some sort of draw. We're beating all those hands, so it seems like this is a get-in.
Yeah.
It's never a fold in my mind.
Yeah, and I don't think he's asking if he should fold here. I think he didn't post the rest of the hand, but then he reveals it later on. I don't know what exact card it was, but so he called here. He didn't raise. He didn't ship. He just called. And then the river was – completed one of the flushes. I'm not sure which one. And then he – the villain, I guess, bet all in, I guess, and as you know by the title, he says he cry folds a set. I mean, I have to do the math to figure out exactly.
I mean, I guess that's the reason to be shoving the turn because now you're giving this guy a chance to bluff the river.
Right. Right, and because of that, I have a hard time folding the river.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm pulling the river, I'll tell you that much, with that much money in there. I only have to be right once every five times on this call to make it profitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Casey said, not only do you give him the chance to bluff so many rivers, but there's a ton of bad cards. Not only cards that beat us, but cards that kill our action. Like, I'd rather, if this guy has King, Queen of Hearts... you know, all those hands, I'd rather him get it in now as opposed to the river coming a three of clubs and him going, shit,
and,
I'm behind.
And there's
also a very small chance that he
folds to our shove on the turn.
Right.
You know, you never know if you have fold equity. If the guy has absolutely nothing, he's got to fold.
You know what I mean? I think what might have froze him is the fact that he didn't get shoved on the turn. He got just raised. I think he's making a bet sizing tell here. Which is what is driving him to maybe overthink folding here on the river. I mean, what's your take on that?
I mean, the guy could turn his cards face up, and the only time I'm folding is if he has queen, queen, or jack, jack.
Yeah, Right.
Even if he has 9-10,
right.
I'm calling.
So, and if the flush does miss the river, then, and that's what he's on, then you're not going to get anything from him. So you might as well try to get it from him now.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess your argument is if the flush does miss the river, the guy might try and bluff it. But he doesn't have fold equity at that point. So
that's right.
He shouldn't have fold equity at that point. So, right. I mean, this should be a shove on the turn.
Yep.
Should be.
Okay. I agree.
100%.
I also agree.
Job,
oof. Good.
Cool.
I don't want to upset
I'm good
KB
like that.
Disagreeing with him.
My choice.
Good. All right. Well, yeah. I think that we agreed. Well, he does fold. Don't know. You know, we don't know what he has. Obviously, now that he folded, but that's what Hero did in this hand. So I disagree with
seems
him.
Seems pretty pits, Jacob. Pretty pits, right from the limp to the fold.
Yeah, you're pissing off you're pissing off Casey, Jacob.
don't do that. We actually do know what the guy had, right? Yeah, we find that out eventually. I thought eventually
he called the turn and then the river made a flush. And then he folded.
And then he folded. Yeah,
so we don't know what he has.
He doesn't repost in the thread anywhere saying.
No, because he folded, so he doesn't know what the guy had. He folded.
Okay, but I just thought maybe the guy might have been a TPE member or something and posted here and go.
Nope.
Or something, you know?
Nope.
Or my buddy talked to him and he said he had this or whatever.
Nope.
Okay.
No good. No good. All right, should we do one last one?
I don't have any more, so.
Oh, yeah, that is.
That's
that
actually
is it,
probably
it?
Pretty good time for me anyway. I got to get Eric in the morning.
Good.
Cool, man. We'll enjoy it. I know you've been grinding hard, so you deserve
need
a few days
need
off.
Need to recoup.
Yeah, you've been running pretty god awful, but I think a few days with your son is just the medicine.
Yeah,
just
I'm looking forward to the 9 mil on Sunday, so I'll just take Friday and Saturday to recharge my batteries with the boy, and then Sunday I'll win $1 million.
Yeah, so for everybody listening, make sure and check out Casey streaming the $9 million guaranteed on PokerStars on Sunday. It's going to be a fun one. I know I'll be watching, so join us in chat, hang out. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, the only thing is if you're on my feed on Twitch, you will not be able to join the chat unless you're a subscriber.
That is a good point.
I just want to give people a heads up so they're not disappointed. That's been something I've been
promising
to my subscribers for a long time, so I got to stick to that.
Yeah, it's actually good that you mentioned that, but you'll still
and
get
you'll
to watch.
And you'll still get to hear everything.
Every
you just won't be able
play.
To join in the chat or take part in any of the, you know, little things I got surprised for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that alone is worth the
yeah, and
time
and most
invested.
Of the people that are going to hear this are not watching the stream right now. So those of you out there, you definitely need to check out Casey's Twitch stream. It is very entertaining. You make it entertaining,
it,
Casey. So
I've already been offered a reality TV show by NBC. I haven't, but it's been a good time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us, Casey. Much appreciated. Thanks to everybody on Twitch who's been listening. I know for people who are hearing this on iTunes, you have no idea what that's all about, but check it out, twitch.tv/bigdogpocket55 for the big stream on Sunday. We're going to take a quick break. And then Ron Fez Buddy and I will come back here and wrap it up on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
Yep.
Different places, yeah. We can try. Oh.
Welcome back to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. Big thanks to Casey Big Dog Pocket Fives for stopping in, talking a little strat with us, and thanks to everybody who was hanging out in the Twitch chat room, listening along. Of course, we couldn't keep up with everybody's comments and questions, but it was cool to have people watching.
That was fun. It was weird at first. I mean, I don't know. You stream before, and I know Casey has. So it was a little, took a little getting used to for me, but I thought that was a lot of fun once we got settled in.
Yeah, I thought it was cool, too. I think, it's something we can maybe experiment with in the future. We'll see if people enjoyed it. I'm going to try to go back and read back through some of the comments and see what people thought. But, I thought it was a good time. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll listen back to it, see if it's worth doing again, and go from there.
Sounds good. And, and like I said, thanks to Casey. And for people who enjoyed the Twitch experience, if it was your first time, feel free to, check out Casey's stream. Ginger does some streaming as well. Like Diego mentioned, I do a little bit, not nearly as much as those guys. But, check out some of the guys who are streaming. I think you'll enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah. And speaking of Casey, he's got some videos running right now, an FTOPS Live sweat. So you check that out. And he's running at the same time on TPE as Andrew Broca's Ante Up series, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't watched that one yet. I need to dig into that
one. Yeah, his are always great. And then we got a couple new series starting, a theory series on short stack play by Ginger. So always love the theory, and people always are asking for short stack theory videos. So we got one of those rolling for you guys. And then Arvis is doing a big 162 history review. So more to come beyond that, obviously. It's been a lot of activity on TPE, a lot of people signing up, a lot of forum chatter. So it's just good stuff happening.
Yeah, tons of new members, which has been fun. Yeah. And I encourage all of you guys to dig into the strategy forum if you haven't already done so, because there's been a ton of activity there and a lot of really good members getting involved in giving feedback and answering questions and stuff like that. So, if you're not already digging into the forums, you definitely should be, because that's like just a wealth of information in there.
Cool. Absolutely.
Right on.
All right, brother.
So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for hanging in there with us during the break while we got ourselves situated and got back with another podcast. We will be back in the very near future. We don't promise, but we probably will. That's it. So thanks for listening. Thanks again to Big Dog. Thanks to everybody on Twitch. And we will see you guys all next time on the Tournament Poker Edge podcast.
Strange and beautiful are the stars tonight that dance around your head. In your eyes I see that perfect world. I hope that doesn't sound too weird. And I want all the world to know that you're all I need.
listen only to your breath. And in that second of it, shooting stars somehow.